What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
Sudan has been engulfed in war since April of 2023 when a power struggle between the military led by Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and the paramilitary rapid support forces led by Chief Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, or, and I'm going to say it wrong, Hemeti, my guest will correct me, as he is known, exploded into open fighting in the capital, Khartoum, and across the country. More than 40,000 people have been murdered, according to UN figures, United Nations figures, but aid groups say that is an undercount, and the true number is probably many times higher. It has created a massive humanitarian crisis with over 14 million people forced to flee their homes, fuel disease outbreaks, and push parts of the country into famine. Massive reports of rape, even of children as young as 1 year old. A genocide on the move in Sudan. We are trying to do our best here on Law and Disorder to catch up and do some regular reporting on what's happening. Now, there's a U.S. ceasefire deal on the table because, you know, that's working out so well in Gaza. Neither side has officially accepted the terms. Here to discuss that and other headlines is Dr. Arif Gamal, born and raised in Khartoum, Sudan, a Nubian poet, environmental scholar, and author of Morning in Saramatu, a Nubian Ode. After earning a doctorate in environmental science in France, he moved to the United States as a senior Fulbright scholar at UC Berkeley. His work blends storytelling and reflections on history, identity, and the environment. He now lives in Northern California. Good morning.
Good morning, Monique.
Thank you so much for joining us. Oh, I'm so glad to have you here. I'm clocking time, and so I'm going to jump right into the headlines, and we're going to have you back. I'm trying to make my own repair for not having been talking about this sooner and for a longer period of time. But let's go to this truce plan. Trump says he put the truce plan forward at the behest of Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. What is the Saudi interest in the region?
Many regions. First of all, across the Red Sea, we are neighbors practically. At the same time, there are contested islands in between the two countries, between Sudan and Mohammed bin Salman. There are many Sudanese who are not only refugees, but they are expatriates who work, and they are also in very high places where they were able to get finally, and I say finally because it is a little bit too late, the years of the Crown Prince. So there many interests, and not only from him, but also from the neighboring countries, and as you know, definitely and shamefully, the UAE.
That's exactly where I was going to go next. The Sudanese army has long accused, and I think it's established among long left, the United States left forces, of arming the rapid support forces. They deny that charge. Talk about the UAE's interest in the region, their collaboration with the United States government, and their likely arming of the RSF.
Now, here are states that are really are interested in Sudan, and not so much in Sudan. They are much more interested in the gold. And Kat, we have asked them, we said, don't you see what is going on? And even though the reporters are not allowed there, we don't have a complete coverage of what's going on. It is the RSF itself that usually posts of the atrocities that they do. And the answer was wrapped up in, we have a 9 years contract of gold. Now, this is really blood gold. And at the same time, they don't need that much. And what is really very sad is that we cannot pick up a phone here and say, and I mean, President Trump, and say enough is enough. So we are waiting for the 9 years to end so that they can withdraw the support to the RSF and Hemeti, but by that time, I don't think that there will be anyone who is standing in Darfur.
Well, you know as well as I do, colonizers don't ever end their extraction of resources from the places they're trying to colonize. They just find a new way with new language to do that. If we were to look at a map of Sudan right now and sort of draw the lines, what we would see in this moment is that it's partitioned by lines of military victory.
Absolutely.
Divided between the RSF and the Sudanese army. But these victories, Professor Gamal, often mean all of the infrastructure in the cities are gone. Banks, government, buildings, schools, housing, burnt to beyond, you know, engaging at all.
Yes.
Talk about how the people caught in the middle and left behind are surviving, because my understanding, and please educate me, is neither side is holding down.
Absolutely.
Folks.
Yeah. Kat, just let me present this in a historical thing, but I'm not going to take long time, but it's very important for your listeners to understand what Sudan is to start with. And maybe we'll have some other time to talk about it. But the major thing is Sudan is a very recent country. It is like all of the countries of Africa. All of them are non-nation states, meaning what? It is a recent country, but it's a very old nations that populated it. And before the independence of the South in Sudan, we had 1,500 what we call tribes. And please think that the word tribe was coined by the colonial rules. And it is there where we started to have the problems with Darfur. Darfur is only 100 years, to be precise, 109 years only that it has been added to Sudan and it became part of Sudan. But before that, it was an independent state. An independent state, and the British, for whatever reason, they exploited the fact that Ali Dinar, who used to be the sultan or the king or the chief over in Darfur, that he was colluding with the Turks. And remember, 1916 was the World War I. So what happened was the British killed Ali Dinar, whose grandkids are here, right? They're still alive. So just to tell you how recent this, all of this is, and they have participated in civil society in the greatest way. So when they killed him, they just put a puppet as, you know, it was an indirect rule, and they put a puppet and they left. And they were much more interested in what we call the riverine cities, happens to be the central city of Khartoum and that of the eastern part of the country. Darfur was left to fend for itself. This is one thing, and in a nutshell, what the history of Darfur is. Now, we have all of the Sudanese or all of the Africans come from an agro base, and agriculture dictates a kind of life that is extremely cooperative. And in cooperation, then you don't have the useless lawyers and so on and so forth who come in. I don't mean to be personal against anybody. But what I'm saying here is they cooperate with each other. And I remember my mother in Nubia, as a young kid, I would see her going all with my aunts and neighbors and women I have never seen before, that they will all go during the peak time of agriculture, meaning sowing seeds for plants and then coming to weed, and then they come to harvest also. So this cooperation would be called later on as a tribe. Okay. And in Darfur, it's a little bit different in the sense that, because what you hear is genocide, what you hear is it is a tribal conflict, and it is a proxy war, and all of these names. And it is time that we put a stop to this and look at what is happening on the ground. That's to say that we have about 80 million people who are going to be famished. There would be a great famine, and it would be even worse than that of the Ethiopian famine we saw in 1974. So what we have in Darfur is two agricultural or if you like, two kinds of farming. One of them are farmers who are settlers, who are there, they're sedentary, they farm their land and they have the property. The property, of course, is a civil property for everyone. Crossing this incisionality happens to be another tribe who have much more. The precious kind of production for them are their camels, their cattle, and so on and so forth. They are basically fleeing the horrible mosquito flies and tsetse flies and so on. So they go south and north, crossing the land of those of the farmers. So every now and then there are clashes that basically will be the first page of every journal, and then it will subside. But what I want to say here is the government was absent. And Kat, the worst thing that we ever have had is somebody called Omar al-Bashir. Because all of this comes back to this 30 years, can you believe, 30 years on the chest of the civilian society in Sudan. And in this 30 years, he did not do anything but consolidate his rule by adding more security and butting one against another and having basically what we called the National Islamic Front, right, as a mantra. And as you know, like, you know, you can always use religion so that, you know, you can make out of it a cause. And he did not, I mean, the whole country was corrupt. At the same time, we didn't have any security. This is the time that practically half of the Sudanese in towns, they couldn't feed their families. My sister used to put sandwiches on the fence of her house because kids going to school, they didn't want money because money couldn't buy anything. The Sudanese pounds was tanked. They couldn't find food to have breakfast. They go, I mean, can you imagine kids going to school without a breakfast? And it's a long day, and it's a hard, very dry and hot day. So people couldn't. So many, there was a horrendous statistics, like about 300 young men and women left the country in a day during the last era of Omar al-Bashir. So it started over there.
I'm clocking time. We're gonna have you back. I'm trying to figure out the best question to ask you in this 3 minutes that I have left with you before I have to move on.
Okay.
And I don't think there's any easy answer. I don't want to get into the facts of the genocide. We're gonna have you on next week or the week after to talk about that. Okay. I think what I'm gonna ask you, I think, is I'm looking at this. I'm gonna there's much lamenting, right, by Black folks, and that the world isn't paying as much attention to Sudan as it is other places in the world.
It is a forgotten war. It is a forgotten, and that's the truth.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't believe let me just finish the question real quick. I don't believe in oppression Olympics, however, I do believe in talking the truth. And I also believe that all of our struggles are tied together, right? I believe very deeply none of us are free until all of us are free. I am also clear that anti-Blackness is a global phenomenon. Okay, now you go.
Yes. Well, I mean, the thing is, I do agree with my niece, Ala Suleiman, who came 2 weeks ago, I think.
Oh, that's your niece.
Yeah. Well, I call her my niece because...
That amazing young woman.
Oh. Her family, and, you know, she's young. So the thing is, she is wonderful in saying, like, you know, everybody kind of says, well, you know what, this is Africa. And they always have something like that going on. Yes. Nobody takes responsibility for the years of, I mean, this is our Holocaust in a way, you know. I mean, it is one. I mean, slavery was one, and then the whole, you know, they did come seeking Africa for a time, and now that the boats are going the other way, nobody wants them. But if you do not stabilize, I mean, this is the idea, if people in Darfur are not settled, they are going to cross the Libyan desert, they are going to cross the Mediterranean, and they are going to come to countries that don't want them, right? And in the most horrible way, because when you look at these countries also, they have interest in Africa. So, I mean, there is this idea that we need a royal who comes from Saudi Arabia to let us know that, you know what, these people need a little bit of attention. And The understanding is, Kat, I have been teaching for many, many years. And the third thing that I do in my slides, saying, like, you know, you can build all of these walls. You can make them as high as you want. But people, if there is a need, they are going to cross those walls. They're going to cross those oceans, and they're going to come to you. This is why we're a melting pot over here, because this is what has happened. Right? Okay. People in it wasn't people who are, you know, they didn't have any problem that crossed or migrated or what you have. So Darfur is now a very big problem. And the major thing because of the time is that, you know, they say two men, right, are fighting, and they say it is a genocide. It is a conflict, as I said before. And these became sound bites that I'm really fed up with. And I think it is time for us and all of the communities that we have, and definitely those are in the diaspora who can hear me right now, they have to come together and decide what it is that we need to do and how we can influence the United Nations. Because I'm sad to say this, but force can only be taken out by force. Whether it be one man, or whether it be a militia, whether it be the army, or whoever it is, we have reasons for why is this happening. But now that you have these innocent civilians who are paying the price, it is time to stop it.
Dr. Arif Kamal, thank you so much for joining us. I will be talking to you soon.
Okay.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.